This is the IBJ Podcast for December 24th, 2018. I'm Mason King. Happy holidays, everybody. As I mentioned up top, this podcast will be posted on December the 24th. So Merry Christmas to all who observe it. And as we know, the holidays in general are all about food, particularly the high calorie variety. And this poses a particular risk for those of us who work in offices, where treats seem to lurk in every break room, in the common areas, in the filing cabinets. And I hazard a guess that the holidays also are tricky for executives. This can be a pretty tense time. You're thinking about your budget for the next year. Your business is probably either in the midst of a lull or a whirlwind of activity. And if you're a stress eater, you're probably pretty squarely in the danger zone. This also is the time of year when we make resolutions to lose weight and improve our health, and usually with at least a vague understanding that losing 5 or 10 or 25 or 50 pounds will somehow make us more effective at work. Well, I have with me today in the studio two well-known Indianapolis executives who have lost a great deal of weight over the last 2 years, both risked fairly serious health problems. I think you both were pre-diabetic before you shed a lot of bulk. And here's the tough thing. They have managed to keep it off for the most part. So they're here to talk about changing their ways and how that has changed their lives. First, we have the newly svelte Tim Kopp, who you may remember as the chief marketing officer for Exact Target before its $2.7 billion acquisition by Salesforce. Today, he's the managing director for the Indianapolis office of Hyde Park Venture Partners. Tim, thank you so much for being here.
You bet. Glad to be here.
Our second guest is David Shank, who for decades now has been a first call expert in public relations, whose clients have included Walmart, Pepsi-Cola, Home Depot, Dick's Sporting Goods, and Denny's. He is the president and CEO of Shank Public Relations Counselors in Indianapolis. David, it is nice to have you.
Hey, it's super to be here with you, too. It's fantastic. It's a great topic, and I hope we can shed or take some weight off the idea.
As you can tell, David was a former broadcaster, and we'll be fighting it out for who has the most broadcasty voice. First off, guys, I by no means want this to be all about numbers, but let's start off by giving the listeners just a sense where you were at your heaviest, how much you initially lost, and where you are today. David is pointing at them.
Yeah, so if you want to look at the pure numbers, I've lost about 40 pounds, but a lot of it's been body recomposition. So I've put on about 10 pounds of muscle mass, but then lost quite a bit of fat. But the raw numbers are about 40.
That's about the same. When I started, and it's interesting that you mentioned you're pre-diabetic, Tim, because my doctor said, you know what, you're getting this close to being pre-diabetic. And for reasons we won't go into today, when you started talking about diabetes and the results and what you have to do to take care of that, I said, ain't no way am I going that direction. And so he said, you've got to start doing something. And so I started out about 2 years ago, right about 245 or 250. And now I'm down. I've been as low as 195, and I'd even like to get lower. But right now, I'm hanging in right about 203, 205, and it makes me mad I'm at that level.
What were your doctors telling you, Tim?
Yeah, it was kind of the same, coming off a high-stress environment. And look, part of it is weight, and weight is a number. But generally, I was just kind of feeling like crap. I didn't have the energy I should. I just wasn't giving life my all. It was just sort of general malaise and tiredness. And so like weight is a really important number, but you know when you're not feeling right, you know. And it was a couple years ago, and it was almost 2 years ago to the day that I really started getting after this, very similar to you.
And that's interesting you bring it up. I mean, how was the weight affecting your ability to do your job? I mean, was it something that you could feel when you're at work, something that you could tell was hampering you in a particular way?
You know, it's funny. I think it sneaks up on you. It sneaks up on you. So wait, you don't wake up and you're 40 pounds heavier one day. It happens you put on 6 pounds a year for 5 years, and then suddenly you're 30 pounds too heavy. Mm-hmm. And it's just subtle, small choices every day. You know, you just kind of quit working out, or you quit putting activity in. You eat one extra meal, and it sneaks up on you. And generally, I would just say my overall energy level, I just wasn't operating at my peak, and I am now.
I would agree with that. I think it's a matter of sometimes you just feel lethargic, and sometimes you'll hit a wall about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I still have to be careful about that. But it's something you don't really realize. I look back at some of the photographs I had taken 10 years or so ago, and I'm going, who is that fat guy there? But I didn't look bad. You know, I just looked like kind of a pudgy, normal executive in a full suit, and I didn't look good. I didn't look bad. But now I take a look at the pictures of me now, and I'm going, what a difference. What a difference. And I even when I looked at the weight scale back in the day, it was kept telling me, you're early obese. I said, no, that's not me. You know, you saw those, I'm going, no. Like, obesity, me, no. It was crazy. But the other important number, too, that, Tim, you mentioned that numbers aren't all the important factor, is my doctor at that time, Dr. Jim Heilman, out at IU Health on the West Side, said, you are way over your bad cholesterol numbers. And if you don't take care of that, you've got some real big issues. Between that and the pre-diabetic stuff, that's when I really turned things around. We went back, Marilyn and my wife and I talked about it. And it was not only a matter of me changing our lifestyle, but between the two of us, we really turned things around now. And she looks even more gorgeous than she did before. She's had some major health improvements, not that she had any health problems at all. But I don't think, at least in our case, I could have done this by myself.
Because that's exactly my story.
We did a major change in our diet. I have not been of my own choice in a fast food restaurant in 2.5 years. A couple of times we've had to just because they were there and there's nothing else. We have maybe one hamburger a week, sort of our Friday night tradition, but we don't use bread. You know, we'll use pocket pizza kind of things. We've even learned to like and love Brussels sprouts and beets. You can fix Brussels sprouts really nicely.
With a little bit of char on them.
A little bit of char, broil them with olive oil and garlic.
Not your grandmother's Brussels sprouts.
No, and never canned Brussels sprouts. God, that'd be awful. But those are the kind of things that we did in terms of our entire lifestyle, more so than just exercising, which we can talk about later.
So let's just summarize kind of from the beginning. What was the basic strategy?
It was about making habit changes. And so it was begin working out, hired a personal trainer, Stephen Boone, who's been fantastic, changed everything for me. So I do that methodically. So, you know, it was Peter Drucker who said sometimes it's the process that's more important than the outcome. And so it's just been setting up anybody can do a 30-day resolution. So guys, as you're thinking about don't do that.
Yeah.
And don't do things that are going to kill you. Just make a series of small short-term changes, and it will, over time, have a radical change on you.
I liked your thinking about the metrics, because I did exactly the same kind of thing. And I was going to mention this, but as we got into this, the first thing I said to myself, self, I got to find out where I am and where I want to go. And so it was really funny, because we were walking around the Sam's Club one day, and I found a Bluetooth-equipped scale. And I thought, okay, that's kind of interesting. And so we looked at it. It was, you know, fairly inexpensive. And now that has become my worst and best friend. I think I mentioned in some note that, you know, my morning regime is you get up, and hitting that scale is the second thing I do every day. And, you know, again, being a business guy and taking a look at charts, if you take a look at that, this chart.
This is an app you're showing us.
This is an app. It's called Fitify. It's free. It came with the link was with the scale. But I can track from that first day at 250. Right down to my rather disgusting 204.8 today, and I know where I'm going. And I've gotten to the point I'm almost nutsy crazy about it, because, you know, if I go up 2 or 3 points in a couple of days, I'm getting crazy about it until I get back.
Me too.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's almost become a personal game.
Huh.
It's not a game I really enjoy.
I always got the impression that you weren't supposed to obsess about them, but you do anyway.
Look, I think that's what people tell you, but the reality is when you're putting effort into something, you want to know that you're getting some. And what you start to learn is you don't panic about a couple pounds, because you'll realize you might eat something. You don't put on 2 pounds literally overnight. It's water retention. And so you start to learn different things. When I eat this kind of food, I'm absorbing water and I don't feel as well. And so you do just get more metrics focused, at least I do, particularly when I'm in a heavier travel schedule or in a rhythm that knocks me off balance. Because what I don't want to do is get 5 pounds off course. That's hard to fix, right? But if you just want to stay on course. So it's every day or every other day tracking. And I have this exact same kind of app where I'm tracking the detail.
Wow. Now, what did you guys do about diet? Did you need to have a dietitian? Is it that hard, or can you do it yourself?
We just did it ourselves. You know, we found some really good, credible websites with good diet recommendations. I would not go cold turkey on stuff. I think it's very difficult to do that. But we took a look at, you know, what were our existing eating habits, and we were not pigs. Let's put it that way. We still had good eating habits, but we did not go totally off beef immediately. We sort of weaned our way out of that, and now hamburger a week is fine for us. We took a look at more vegetables, more fruits. One of the things we did was we got rid of snack foods. We have to have a crunchy thing, like before going to bed, just as a snack to hold you over. But rather than potato chips, we're now finding that the crunchy veggie thins, and no, they're not a client. I'll probably mention other people. And no, they're not a client, but I'd be glad to work with them. But there are things out there that are vegetable-based, are still crunchy, have a little bit of appropriate salt for you. But it takes care of that last bit of, you know, what do I need to have before I go to bed, and then drinking water instead of soft drinks.
Very similar. I tried to make my daily habit eating out of the refrigerator, not the pantry, would be the way I'd put it. I just don't eat much out of a pantry now. Things that are processed foods, I just don't think are great. So whenever, look, life happens and you can't always do that, but 80% of the times I'm eating whole, real food, and it makes a big difference. And it's also just sort of learning what are the appropriate serving sizes. The best part of all this to me is just appropriate energy management throughout the day. I don't have the lulls, the highs, the lows, and I just need a steady, consistent amount throughout the day. And I do eat very, very low sugar. I eat almost no sugar because I just find it causes these energy spikes, and I want to run sort of fine-tuned throughout the day. So though we didn't go cold turkey on anything, I've gone quasi-cold turkey on sugar or like really heavy refined carbohydrates.
I tried to do that a couple of years ago because, I just read something online and thought, I can do that. And it was amazing to me how much stuff has sugar in it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, almost everything has some amount of sugar on it. Anything that's, you know, been prepared by somebody else.
Yeah. And not all are bad. Like fruits and vegetables and those kind of things, you know, obviously I think are great. But yeah, sometimes that big glass of juice to start the day may not be as helpful as you think.
How much more exercise were you enduring?
So for me, exercise, look, weight is part of this for sure, but I'm a big believer of start with this end in mind and work backwards. Why are you doing all this? Of course, it's to chase a number, but a number is just the outcome. It's how am I feeling, and it's to live, you know, be more productive and happy in what you're doing day to day, but to live a longer life. If you just want to lose weight, 80% of it's diet. I would say almost all the leverage is focus on getting your diet right. Hmm. If you really want to start to recompose your body and have more, you know, a higher fitness level and energy level, like my resting heart rate has gone from 78 to 52. So my heart is your heart is a muscle, and I've been able to strengthen that muscle. So I do strength conditioning for either 3 or 4 days a week for an hour where I'm burning 600 calories a session, and I get at it pretty hard. And that has been a big part of my personal journey.
And exercise is a major part of what I've done. And you have a personal trainer, which is admirable. And I just jumped in. But I looked at credible sources. What do I really need to do? And I made some really stupid, bad mistakes. Started out really working hard on a cheap rowing machine, which caused some mega permanent damage to my body.
Whoa.
Yep, but don't go there. Then shifted over to a treadmill and did a lot of work on that. Had cheap shoes. That gave me a severe case of plantar fasciitis. Don't do that. But it kept me going, and it was for the first several months on the rowing machine and on the treadmill. It's where I had the major drop in weight, and it goes back to what you're saying on reconfiguration and losing the water. But now I'm into three different exercise programs. One is a sort of required physical fitness or a physical therapy program, and the other are just strictly weight and exercise sweat starters. One uses this elastic band thing that is really a sweat producer. It's a great thing. It's a great fitness program. And the other is a Johnson & Johnson workout program that got high reviews that, for 7 minutes a day using their program really gets you uptight and gets you, I shouldn't say uptight, but it gets you going well. Hmm. And so between the physical therapy work and either one of these two, it's been a big thing for me. I've got the band over here. We could have a group exercise band program. But again, they're app-driven. The voices are bizarre. They'll tell you when to start. They'll tell you when to stop. And then one of them, he says, "You're doing a great job." I'll take all the reinforcement I can get.
So this Johnson & Johnson program, which I've already written down, that's an app.
That's an app.
Okay.
Yep.
At what point in this process do you decide to buy new clothes?
Oh, that's a whole different story. First of all, I didn't, but it was required. And it didn't really hit me until I was traveling last year, had a pair of pants on I'd had on before. I had not worn them after I started the regime. went through TSA, took the belt off, and I literally almost dropped trowel as walking out of the safety check. And I thought, okay, this is craziness, but it does show some real advancement. And then after that, I found on the internet a belt company called No Beep Belts, and it's a great belt. But it's an indicator that there is some real issues there, and I lost about 3 inches off the weight. And so rather than buying all new clothes to do that, I did one of two things. One, I took them to an alteration company on the west side. They did a great job of altering some of my major suits. And the ones I couldn't alter, I went to Newman & Company, the consignment store in Broad Ripple. I got some really good stuff, relatively inexpensively, and could move forward that way. Nice. But it's going to be an ongoing process.
That's admirable. I was all about the clothes. And I was very happy.
Well, you were all about the personal trainer,
yeah,
too.
Tim's a pretty snappy dresser.
Look, I went from, I was barely squeezing into my size 36 pants. So I was a 37 on a good day, and I'm wearing 31s now. So I've lost, lost 6 inches. So
thousands of men across the country now.
What? So, no, but you're darn right. If I've worked that hard, I'm going to have pants that fit. So I went and bought them.
That's kind of like how I judge, is the pant size.
Well, I'm back to my high school pant size, so.
Wow, that's incredible.
I think that is important. You look for those little indicators of success. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every time I put on a pair of pants now that I can fit in nicely and there's not 2 inches between my belly button and the waistband, I'm going, okay, something is happening here. I really kind of like what's going on. And then it's progressive, too, because I hope, you know, in another 6 months, I'm going to have to go through that process again. And either get them altered or go buy some new pants.
Yeah.
Tim, you mentioned in one of our correspondences via email that the much harder part of this process for you has been maintaining the weight. What does that mean?
I think that's absolutely true because, look, we're all addicted to these little dopamine hits, right? And it feels pretty good when you get on a scale and maybe it goes from 240 to 238 in a week. It's like, okay, good. There's this low-hanging fruit, and then it drops another 2 pounds, and it drops another 2 pounds, and that feels really good. And there's not many things in life where you can say maintenance is a goal. My goal is to stay the same. The real work for me kind of occurred probably between year one and year two, where I'd gotten a lot of the result. Now it was buttoning it down into kind of a lifestyle. Now I'll tell you, I literally don't even think about it. It's what I do. I've just set up habits and routines, and this is what I do, and this is the way I eat, it's the way I work. I don't feel like I'm sacrificing a thing. But that period, somewhere between, you know, depending on the person, kind of month 3 to 6 to a year and a half is kind of when it becomes a little bit of a grind and you just have to stick with it.
And the holiday season is the worst time, not only for the availability of food, it's not going to do you any good, but also how do you work in the time to actually get into the exercise regime? And I get up a disgustingly early hour for me before 6 o'clock, spend about 20 minutes or a half hour doing some kind of exercise, and then have breakfast, and then we go on about the day. But I can see now coming up with the holiday with the family visitors, and you know, we had this fantastic gingerbread cake that Marilyn made with our two grandsons this weekend, and that was a royal pain not to get in and attack that sucker with the gum drops and the gummy bears built into it, and I'd violate it. I couldn't maintain it, but those kind of things are going to be in front of you. And I think also alcoholic beverages, you know, so are loaded with calories and things. It's not a good thing.
Yeah, this time of year is hard. But look, you get knocked off balance for a couple of weeks, just get back on the horse and go.
Okay, I've got a theory about modern executives and weight. And you guys tell me if I'm right.
Of course you are.
Okay. All right, just wait. Okay, here's the theory. It used to be that if you were an executive and you had a little bit of weight on you, that was okay, right? It was a sign that you were prosperous. Mm. Today, and particularly as we pay a lot more attention to the tech sector, where CEOs are younger and businesses talk a lot about being fast and of being flexible, there's an expectation that you have the same BMI you had when you were 22. That if you're overweight, you are not performing to your maximum potential. Do you feel that kind of stress or that kind of expectation?
You know, I don't feel anxiety about it, but I will say there's been a cultural change. Even since I started my career maybe 20 years ago, it was more celebrated to put in the extra hours, be at your desk, those kind of things. Now it's like if you don't have a standing desk, people think you're behind, you know? So it's just more culturally pervasive to take care of yourself.
Leave us with a couple of thoughts. The person who's listening right now thinking, okay, I want to make a change. As David mentioned, I mean, there are a lot of missteps you can take. What would you tell that person is the most important first step to take?
Look, I would say when you're confronted with the data, don't be in denial. It doesn't work with anything in life. So when you're confronted with the denial, think about it. Don't think about it as a resolution. Talk to about it with your spouse, a friend, somebody else who can be on this journey with you, I think is one of the most important success factors.
Big point I would also make is do it before you get to panic. Recognize that listening to the kind of experiences that we have had, and you know there are millions of other people who have had the same kind of thing, that you know your basic lifestyle is probably going to suggest to you that it's time to do something. Particularly if you're 35 plus, and I am way plus to 35. We won't go where close I am on that, but it's a matter of saying it's there. Do it right.
But let's leave it there. That's brilliant, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for doing this.
Great,
really important topic.
My thanks again to Tim and David. And before I let you go to enjoy the holiday, I want to draw your attention to a story in this week's print edition of IBJ and caution there are some terrible puns ahead. Indie Reads, the adult literacy not-for-profit founded in 1988, has entered a new chapter after years of steeping in red ink. Finishing his second year as CEO, Ryan King has turned around his finances and significantly altered its teaching model. But the plot is thickening. With its celebrated bookstore on Massachusetts Avenue, it's getting priced out of the space and likely must move when its lease is up this summer. Lindsay Erdody has the rest of the story in this week's print edition, which makes a great gift for coworkers or loved ones, or online at IBJ.com, and we can sell you a subscription for that one too. And here's a quick programming note. The podcast will take off a week for the holiday. We'll be back with a new episode on January the 7th. In the meantime, I'm Mason King. Thanks so much for making the podcast a part of your year, and we'll see you again in 2019.
So when are you starting your exercise program?
I don't know.
January 1st.
I've got about a week off, 11 days off here during the holidays, so I'll get on it. I'll figure out what I'm going to do.
Okay. We're going to hold you to that.
Yes. Okay. I'll check it. I'll tell you.